I greet you all this morning in the name of Jesus. I'd like to talk this morning about biblical concepts of communication or how to share and talk to each other. So when we think about communication, we hear the word a lot. We hear about communication, husbands, wives communicating, cell phone communications, internet communication, just lots and lots of, the word gets used a lot. But when you break it down, it comes down to just the idea of sharing ideas with others. So I'm kind of, we're all each in our body, right? And other than perhaps like our spiritual nature where we can pray and talk to God, others don't necessarily know what we're thinking or what we might want or wish. So we have to communicate. We have to share with them. And so it's basically we're transferring that information back and forth. So there's a lot of communication that happened in the Bible, and I want to go through a couple of different examples and then try and see if there's some lessons for us. So one thing, you can split communication up different ways. One way is you have the verbal, where we have the spoken word. Thank you. And then you have the nonverbal, where we're looking more at things like a person's appearance or their countenance or how their face looks or their body language or how they're feeling. So two examples there where in the Bible, in Genesis 40 verse 7, we can go and read that here. It says here, and they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to be in the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the word of his Lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly? And they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. And then also Nehemiah, the king also noticed that Nehemiah was sad. In Nehemiah 2:2, he says, and the king said to me, why is your face sad? Seeing you are not sick, this is nothing but sadness of heart. Then I was very much afraid. So I think there's a lot to looking at people's countenances and deciding what the best course of action is, how best to communicate to them. So you may not want to give some really heavy instruction or information to somebody who looks extremely exhausted and tired. You may want to tell them to go get some rest. Or you may want to just not come bouncing and happy and rejoicing to someone that looks sad. You may want to ask them why they're sad. Or a loud good morning, as Proverbs says. You do not wish your neighbor a loud good morning. You'll be waking him up. You'll not be aware of your surroundings and your circumstances. And that's another thing is we think of good timing. For instance, Queen Esther, if we look in Esther 7, 1 to 6, she finally brought her petition to the king, and let me just find that. And how many banquets was it? I think it was at least one banquet or two banquets of wine before, and then she finally waited to bring her petition. It says, so the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen, and the king said unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther, and it shall be granted thee? And what is thy request, and it shall be performed, even the half of the kingdom? Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, and to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, Who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. So it makes you wonder if Esther hadn't prepared his banquets and hadn't already won the king's favor, how well would the king have taken her request? I think because of the graveness of the issue, she didn't want to risk upsetting or angering the king. So she made a lot of preparation to bring this request. And sometimes we get impatient and we just want to go out and communicate what let's get this done. I'm just going to tell them what I think and we're going to, get it over with. But we don't wait till the right time or the right place to share that. So I think we can learn from Esther here to wait for the proper timing to communicate. Along with the verbal and nonverbal, we have there's also different ways of communicating. Some people break it down that, people learn differently. Like some people like graphical illustrations. And I think we all appreciated something like these grapes and the olives here. It helps us remember that, Ed brought grapes and olives. Now, what did that mean exactly? And, we can actually remember that. And I think it's like with children's lesson. Children always like when there's a bag up here and there's a graphical illustration. That's more me. I love seeing a picture or a diagram of something. I know there's lots of other people. There's other people who just rather read an article about how to do something or how to remember something, and they remember it that way. Other people want to hear it. There's other people that learn by doing. And I'm somewhere between there. I've got to actually do the action myself till I learn it. I've got to actually see the picture. And that's kind of how I get it. And, when you look at the Old Testament, there was lots of types and figures there. So you had things like the tabernacle and the temple. And, why did they go to all that trouble with all that gold and all those, different objects and the different coverings of the tabernacle and all those symbols? And I think one of those things, one of the reasons was that God wanted to communicate people visually. He wanted to give people a visual representation of his heavenly truths. And so I think that's another way we can communicate is with visual representations, details, examples, it'd be something like the food we have up here, or like a children's lesson, or a picture in a storybook, or something like that. So I think that's a great way to communicate. The helmet of salvation, that sort of thing. We have a few examples further down that we'll get to as well. One bad thing or bad habit of communication is assumptions. And that's when we take limited details and we try and form a conclusion. We make an assumption. So, for example, in Acts 2, 1 to 15, we have the day of Pentecost and the disciples speaking in tongues. And what did the people assume was happening? They assumed they were drunk. Did they know the truth? Did they investigate it? No, they just looked at it and they said, that action looks like something I saw before. I think they're probably drunk. And the disciples had to say, no, we are not drunk, as you suppose, for it is only, early in the day, or however that verse goes. Also in 1 Corinthians 14, we have the order of the church, how the church service should happen. And it goes into, in that time, people were still speaking in tongues, and Paul was going between, tongues versus prophecy. And he says, now let's say you're having your church service and you all decide to speak in tongues. He said, what if an outsider comes in? What is he going to think? He's going to assume that you all are beside yourselves, that there's something wrong here. But if you're all prophesying, the outsider will be able to understand. So he's saying in that case, in the case of a church service, it's better to prophesy than to speak in tongues. And that's the type of thing that we need to be careful of. Make sure we go and get all the facts. Make sure we investigate before we draw conclusions, and that we don't make assumptions just based on, you know, maybe we had a past experience, so this must be the same thing all over again. And, you know, instead we get the facts, we get the details, we investigate first before drawing conclusions. Along with that, 1 Corinthians 14:8, it's probably a really good verse in regards to this sort of thing. And that was the thought of clarity. Let's try and have good, clear communications, clear and understandable communication. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 8, and says, "For if the trumpet give an uncertain sound, who shall prepare himself to the battle?" So if you're hearing the trumpet, it's supposed to call you to battle, but it's not clear. It's like, was that a trumpet, or was that, did I just hear something? And if that sound is not clear, or if the trumpet is perhaps giving commands or signals, and it's not clear, and it's trying to say, you know, go quickly, or wait, or something like that, and it's not clear, how you know what to do? So clear instructions, clear communications are very important. When you think of Noah building the ark, God gave him very clear instructions how to build it. When you think of the building of the tabernacle and the temple, those are all clear and detailed. Some of the chapters in the Bible, we don't like to read a lot of, but those are the genealogies. So we have chapters and chapters of people that begot people that begat people. But that is all to establish lineage and to keep track of the line of the Israelites, and that's to help with the clarity. So I think clarity is good. I think record keeping is good in some cases, and so that can all be very helpful. How about just being very direct and succinct at times? Like we can. So for that, in Matthew 8 verses 9 and 10, it says, "For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he marveled and said to those who followed him, truly I tell you, with no one in Israel have I found such faith." And I've always enjoyed that verse, and I'm always like, why does it say he's under authority? He's like, wouldn't we say I'm the boss, so I say, but he says, I have a boss, so I say. So isn't that often how it is? We look at our boss and we're like, oh, he's just always telling me what to do and this and that, but then we don't realize that he has a boss as well. And then if he's the CEO or president of the company, then he's answering to God, and he has a boss or a heavenly king to be under. So, but the other part about this verse is just that he says, come, and he comes, and do this, and he does it. And it's not delayed obedience. So it's like right away, and it gets done. And I tell my children when they apply for a job someday that if they can do this, that they'll have a really good chance of keeping their job, because it's one of the key parts of a work ethic is doing what the boss says and doing it quickly. So sometimes there's a place, first of all, to give good, clear, and succinct instruction, and also to listen and obey that. How about this one? How about asking questions? How about if something's not clear, do we ask questions? Do we go and say, now I don't understand, how should this be? And that is, I think we see that normally in the Bible where questions are asked. It's usually a good thing. I think it can also show doubt on the part of the person asking. But for instance, when the angel appeared to Mary, Mary responded, well, how can this be? And then the angel gave an explanation. You know, I think Now Gideon, he needed a sign before he could proceed with what God was going to tell him to do. So, but I think asking for clarity, there's nothing wrong with that. I think after a while we do have to stop asking and start moving ahead. We don't want to move forward with something before we actually understand what it actually is that we need to do. The other interesting thing about asking questions is, let's say you don't agree with someone and, you know, you just feel like, oh, that's not right. Let me say my point to balance this out. If you ask a question like, tell me more about this, what you're believing, or tell me more about what you're trying to say, it can be kind of a non-confrontational way to enter into that conversation without getting into some sort of a heated debate. So just, you know, asking questions, or maybe there is a glaring error, and if you ask a gentle question about that, where you're seeing maybe a weak spot, well, how can this part work? It can sometimes just really oil of love and kindness in that conversation, so it doesn't turn into some kind of a debate or argument. How about those of us that like to be a little funny sometimes? I think I try to be funny sometimes. I'm not sure if I always achieve that. But how do people know if you're serious or not if you're always joking around and if you're always, telling jokes? So Genesis 19:14, the angels had told Lot to leave the city that's going to be destroyed, and Lot goes to his sons-in-law. So Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. So I don't know what was going on there. We can imagine all kinds of things in Sodom that were influencing Lot, bringing him to this place. But they saw him to be jesting. And if we're living in such a way that people can't believe us, or they have to question first, now, is he joking or is he serious now? They can't quite tell the difference. That is not a good place to be. We need to, and that's not clear communication. If someone's not sure if you're being humorous or if you're being serious. We have the thought of restraint. James 3 talks about taming the tongue. So, he says there we can tame all manner of wild beasts, but can someone tame the tongue? Can we hold our tongue? Can we restrain from speaking? Or can we keep from speaking bad things? And then we have the thought about bad counsel. I don't know about you all, but I like to get good advice. I like to ask people, what should I do here? What should I now? I've maybe not asked as much advice since I've gotten a little older. I'm not sure quite why, but I think my friends are too busy to give me a lot of advice. And I learned that, if you're always, if I always call Art and ask for building advice, he might send me a bill after a while if I keep it. So it's like, okay, I guess, there's some value here. I can't just get all this for free all the time. But there is the whole thing about bad counsel. So let's read about Rehoboam in 1 Kings 12. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel were come to Shechem to make him king. And it came to pass, when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard of it, for he was fled from the presence of King Solomon, and Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt, that they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the congregation of Israel came and spake unto Rehoboam, saying, thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve thee. And he said unto them, depart yet for 3 days, and come again to me. And the people departed. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon's father while yet he lived, and said, how do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, if thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him, And he said unto them, What counsel give ye that we may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, Make thy yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter. And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, Thus shalt thou speak unto this people that spake unto thee, saying, Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lay you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. And my father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had appointed, saying, Come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people roughly, and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him, and spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, My father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying, which the Lord spake by Ahijah the Shilonite unto Jeroboam the son of Nebat. When all Israel saw that the king hearkened not unto them, the people answered the king, saying, What portion have we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see thine own house, David. And Israel departed unto their tents. But as far as for the children of Israel, which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. So we have the Israel split between Judah and Israel because of Rehoboam. Here, if Rehoboam would have taken the advice of the elders, we could definitely see that he would have been able to reign over the whole nation. But instead, he listened to the younger men who gave him bad advice, and that divided, that had the result of dividing the kingdom. There was also David and Absalom. Absalom especially seemed to have his counselors. At one point in Absalom's life, there was this fellow named Hushai who gave good counsel to Absalom, but later in 2 Samuel 17 gave bad counsel, and the bad counsel was actually of the Lord. So if we can look at 2 Samuel 17, verse 5, because Absalom was rebelling against David. So the Lord ordained for him actually to receive bad counsel from Hushai. Then said Absalom, Call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spoke unto him, saying, Ahithophel hath spoken after this manner. Shall we do after this saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said unto Absalom, The counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds, as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit or in some other place, and will come to pass, when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, There is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. And he also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt, for all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant. Therefore I counsel thee that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee, from Dan even to Beersheba, and as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that thou go to the battle in thine own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground, and of him and of all the men that are with thee there shall not be left so much as one. And of all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river until there be not one small stone found there. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. So you've got to be very careful who you listen to, because in this case, God gave Absalom bad counsel so that he could bless David. How about back to when there's conflict? How about diffusing the situation when we see that there's conflict? And I don't know if you all remember the story, I'm sure you remember the story of Gamaliel in Acts chapter 15. And I don't know if you may be of the opinion that Gamaliel gave good counsel or he gave bad counsel, but either way, it's very interesting what he says there. In Acts 15, 34 to 42, it says, notwithstanding, it pleased Silas to abide there still. Paul also and Barnabas continued in Antioch, teaching and preaching the word of the Lord with many others. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, I don't believe I have the correct verse there. Let me just look at this again. Okay, I don't have it here. But anyway, I believe Gamaliel said something to the effect of that they wanted to punish the apostles. And Gamaliel said, well, look, there was this this other fellow came up, and he was a rebel, and he led, do you have the?
Acts 5:34.
I had a one in front of it. That was my problem. When they heard that, they were cut to the heart and took counsel to slay them. Then stood there up one in the council, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a doctor of the law, had a reputation amongst all the people, and commanded to put the apostles forth a little space, and said unto them, ye men of Israel, take heed to yourselves that ye intend what ye intend to do is touching these men. For before these days rose up Theudas, boasting himself to be somebody, to whom a number of men, about 400, joined themselves, who was slain, and all as many as obeyed him were scattered and brought to naught. After this man rose up Judas of Galilee in the days of the taxing, and drew away much people after him. He also perished, and all, even as many as obeyed him, were dispersed. And now I say unto you, refrain from these men, and let them alone. For if this counsel or this work be of men, it shall come to naught. But if it is of God, ye cannot overthrow it, lest happily ye be found even to fight against God. And to them they agreed. And when they had called the apostles and beaten them, they commanded that they should not speak in the name of Jesus, and let them go. And they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. And daily in the temple and every house they ceased not to teach and preach Jesus Christ. So you look at what Gamaliel did there. He said, you know, we'll let it up to God, because look what has happened before. We've seen these other people, and they weren't successful. So this man may not be successful either. And I think sometimes we say something similar, and I think it's usually said something like this: it's God's church, we'll let God take care of it. And that's often when we're getting kind of uptight about something that's going on, and we're like, well, it's got to be this way or that way, or I won't be able to deal with it. And then we say, well, it's God's church, let God deal with it. So I think there's a balance there, because sometimes we do have to deal with things. And I think that's where people look at Gamaliel and say, well, we can't live 100% like that. But I think in this case, he was kind of a voice of reason. So, you know, it seemed like they weren't getting anywhere. So he said, you know, let's leave it to God. Let's let God take care of this matter, because, you know, in the end, God is in control. So, you know, I think sometimes there are situations where we have to be that voice of reason.
Does he say there, unless we find yourself fighting against God?
He does, yes. Yeah. And that's what he says there. So we'll let God take care of it. Are we the type of people that make a situation worse, or can we calm things down and bring it to a level place where everyone can decide what to do, or where we can actually seek the will of God and let God decide what we should do? I have quite a few of these. Does anyone else have any thoughts about good communication or any of these things that we've covered so far?
Mm-hmm.
And Hushai, yep.
Yeah, and how God actually brought bad counsel
someone who's against him. So that's interesting. The counsel alone is not going to be necessarily successful, but rather a hard to turn to a God in combination with counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can, and I see that bear out in you know, our current life, because I've seen people get counsel, bad counsel. You know, like, if you really want to do something bad, you can find somebody to support
yes.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, you know, it's counsel not alone is what's good, but that combination with a heart that's turned toward God, that's when he'll bring good counsel into your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, instructing.
In the multitude of counselors, there is safety.
That
yeah.
correlates with the scripture, itching ears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the same exact topic. You hear what you want to hear. Yeah.
So I think we've got multiple counselors. And I have also heard, I think it was Richard Moma said already, it was something to new converts coming into the Mennonite church. Is they very much wanted to ask, you know, what should I do? You know, how do we do in this situation, in that situation? What should I do about this or that? And I think his counsel was that if you ask too many people, you'll get too many answers. And so maybe limit how many people you're asking. Now, it's kind of the opposite of the multitude of counselors, but I don't know if that was a good example of counsel or not. It was more of, yeah.
In the multitude of counselors, there's safety, but does it mean that...
They all agreed? Yep.
It could be wrong.
And each of the counselors may have a different point of view, so maybe that's where the safety is because, oh, this one sees it from this angle.
You can find safe counsel in a multitude, but it doesn't mean it all is.
Yep. And it's right. It may only be part of that those counselors that are actually giving good counsel.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
When Ahab went to go to war, right?
Oh, same thing.
He asked for counsel and all those, you know, 400 prophets or whatever said, oh, yeah, yeah, you're going to be fine.
Nonsense.
Well, don't call this prophet of God because he always prophesies bad about
me. Yep.
So
401, right?
So at the end of the day, if we like good counsel, God has promised wisdom to those who ask him, but, you know, we only get that when we ask God for wisdom and then seek counsel. And I think God's
yes.
at that point, he won't let us hang because he said, I will give wisdom to those who ask me.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
He will give good counsel.
Yep.
That's good.
Any other examples you can think of communication in the Bible or good communication habits we can have? And then I have some more we can go through then.
Acts 15, I think it's where, I'm not sure if you had the wrong picture in the wrong time there. Acts 15 is a good example of where they were disagreeing in the church and they talked through it, worked through the what happened, the facts.
The Jerusalem council there, where they worked out, they had a problem, and they came to a compromise, basically. It's like, I don't know if you would, basically,
consensus,
don't have to keep the law of Moses, but our Jewish brethren are going to find these three things offensive, so let's...
No, it was really a question of whether they would submit to God's choice to receive the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
That was
mm-hmm.
the real issue.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And, will the Jews receive the Gentiles? Acts 15, Jerusalem Council. All right, any other examples?
Somewhere in the Psalms, David says something along the lines of, once has God said, but twice have I heard. Or am I just making that up? I can't find the reference, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I recognize that you're Adam. Can't get more to you.
So what would that say to you then?
Take notes.
Take notes. Okay.
Set reminders for yourself so that you don't forget
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And Psalm 62:11. Let me go ahead and read that. I think the Jerusalem Council would be a good study sometime. I think it may be too much for the moment. It says, God has spoken once, twice have I heard this, that power belongeth unto God. So when you talk about taking detailed notes, in Nehemiah 2,
Nehemiah had a very detailed request to give to the king. And I was wondering, did Nehemiah take notes before that? I tend to think Nehemiah was just thinking about returning to Israel a lot. And so when he came with this request to the king, he had it on his mind, but maybe he had been taking notes. So this is when his countenance was sad that we had read earlier. And he says, and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? And the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, if it please the king, if thy servant be found favor in thy if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set a time. So we have scheduling, right? We're setting a schedule. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river. Oh, yeah, I might need a passport. I might need a way to travel here. A visa. Thank you. Yeah, I might need a visa to get through all these other kingdoms. Let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah. And let a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest. Okay, now he has his project list, his shopping list, whatever you want to call it. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city and the house, and I shall enter into it. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. So Nehemiah was definitely prepared there. And it's quite likely that he was keeping lists and notes and things like that. Along with that thought, though, writing notes, and once did the Lord say unto me, and twice again, we had the thought of repetition and over-communication. And this is something that they tell us at work. They say, over-communicate. And I don't know why it is, but for some reason we have an inner fear that if I need to meet Art somewhere, that I can call him one time and ask where it is and what time I should be there. If I have to call him twice, he's going to start wondering why I can't remember things. And if I have to call him three times, then he's going to start resenting my phone calls, because I'm just bothering him too much and not keeping track of it. So because of that fear of somebody coming back to you and saying, why are you calling me so much, we tend not to communicate at all. We tend not to. We'll just go with where we think it is, where we think it might be, when we think it might be, and so we don't set those proper parameters. We had to think about that thought of repetition. And I asked my wife, do you remember anywhere in the Bible where they had to say things more than once to get a point across? Okay. Okay.
God called to Abraham. He didn't just say Abraham. He said, Abraham, Abraham, or Moses, Moses. So men need to be told things twice.
There you go. Yep. I agree, yeah. So, and my wife reminded me of John, where, very end, where Jesus is talking to Peter. John 21:15, it says, so when they had dined, Jesus said unto Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He said unto thee, feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonah, lovest thou me? He said unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things, that thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus said unto him, feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself, and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thine hand, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This he spake, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, follow me. So we see that happening. So Jesus kept asking Peter. And the third time, Peter kind of had that reaction. Like, Lord, you know I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. So it's very much that repetition, that emphasis. And I don't think we need to resent repetition. I think we can see that as being a good thing, as something that helps us to remember. That can be good.
Is there any significance in Jesus asking Peter that question three times, being that in his foreknowledge he knew that Peter was going to deny him three times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. It had already happened, but maybe it was, that is significant. Maybe it was a way that Peter could, like if he had lingering thoughts that, you know, hey, I denied the Lord. Maybe this was Jesus' way of affirming him that, you know, hey, you're it's okay. You're forgiven. It's behind you. I never thought of that before. Yeah,
I've heard that. And on the third time when he denied him, I think he kind of got unhinged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the third round kind of unhinged him again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That third stop really gets the point.
Yep, exactly. So let's be willing to say things two or three times if needed and not get offended, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my. All right. Here's another one. How about empathy? That when we're talking with someone, that we say to walk a mile in their moccasins, to put ourselves in their shoes, maybe if they wear a hat, maybe try wearing their hat, or putting yourself in their situation. The one example that I thought of there was a woman at the well. So Jesus went through Samaria and met that woman at the well, and she wanted to talk about water, drawing water out of the well and so on. And Jesus said, well, I have the living water, you know. And they started that conversation with water and then went on from there. They both had a common need of water, but Jesus was then able to help her from that point. And I think if we identify with people, we can often reach them. We can often communicate better with them than if we're coming at it from a totally different angle, totally different vantage point. If we can identify with them first, that's very helpful. We should also be good listeners. There's a 2 Samuel 20. I probably won't read it the whole time, but David sent Joab after somebody named Sheba. He said, you have to get Sheba. Go get him. And they found Sheba in this city. And so Joab was besieging the city and had ramparts built, and they were just ready to totally destroy this place. And then there was a wise woman that said, Joab, you come here and you listen to me. He said, why are you doing this? Why are you besieging our city? He said, I need this man named Sheba. And the wise woman said, we will throw his head over the wall to you. And they took care of it, and they saved their city. She was very wise, but she also got Joab to listen as well. So that's another good example. I should have shared this one earlier. Let's look at Judges 9, and this is along the line of those word pictures. This is a parable that we don't hear a lot. It's not I guess the situation wasn't very nice that the parable was given in. But if we go to Joshua, and it's a parable of the bramble. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. Judges 9, and it says here, and it came to pass when all the kings which were on this side of Jordan, let me just look here. That's actually another one. That's deception. The Gibeonites. I'm going to have to...
Judges 9:7, is that what you're referring?
That's probably what... What's that? That one's... that's a Gibeonites and deception. I was actually looking for sort of Abimelech. Oh, I see my problem. I'm in Joshua. There we go. Judges 9. And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them, and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether is better for you, either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his brother's brethren spake to him in the ears of all the men of Shechem all these words. And the hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, He is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone. Notwithstanding yet, Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, and all the house of Millo, and went and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. And when it was told to Jotham, he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice and cried, and he said unto them, Hearken unto me, you men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them. And they said unto the olive tree, Reign thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? And the tree said to the fig tree, Come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said the trees unto the vine, Come thou and reign over us. And the vine said unto them, Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth ye anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now therefore, if ye have done truly and sincerely, in that ye have made Abimelech king, and ye have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands, for my father fought for you, and ventured his life far, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. And ye have risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons 70 persons upon one stone, and have made Abimelech the son of his maidservant king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If ye have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech, and devour the men of Shechem and the house of Millo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Millo, and devour Abimelech. And Jotham ran away and fled, and went to Beer, and dwelt there, for fear of Abimelech his brother. So there you have a really interesting word picture. You know, you hear the story, and it's like, okay, what's this about trees becoming kings, and we have a bramble, and there's fire going out from the bramble. And very very much like a parable, like you can't understand it, but then you have to ask yourself the question, why did he flee right after he gave the parable? And I think it was pretty to the point. I think people got it, what he was trying to say. It's like Abimelech has done wrong in killing all these sons of Gideon. You sure you really want to make him king? And, you know, it's okay, but you'll probably be destroyed because of it. So, and that was kind of the gist of it. So, you know, a word picture, some illustrations can go a long way to convey a point. And I think that's why Jesus gave the parables in the New Testament. He spoke with parables to give teachings. A few other things. Setting expectations is really, really good. So when you're talking with other people, make sure you all know, and especially when you're planning something, make sure you all know what you're expecting. And we don't, we like, at least I like to be this nice person that, you know, yeah, just, you know, come and let's do this, and we'll just have a great time, and it'll all work out great. Sometimes we have to, you know, set some expectations. Who, what, where, when. I still remember, I was telling my children about this. We had joined a church, and there was a Spanish class that was happening. And I think the first class was at one location. And then they switched locations, but there was about three or four of us that somehow never got the memo. And I think we were just too new and too out of the loop to get that memo. So I was just like, that's a good example of not knowing where something is supposed to be held at. And I don't know if it was the people in charge that didn't communicate it, or if we were making assumptions that if the class was at a certain place, then the class would continue at that place. So there was that sort of thing. But be very clear what your expectations are. Like, who's going to be there? What are we going to do? Where's it going to be? When's it going to happen? Jesus gave a good example of that in Luke 19, 28 to 35. And it says, "And when he had thus spoken, he went before them, ascending up to Jerusalem. And it came to pass, when he was come nigh to Bethphage and Bethany at the mount called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying, Go ye into the village over against you, in which at your entering ye shall find a colt tied, whereon never man sat. Loose him, and bring him hither. And if any man ask you, Why do you loose him? Thus shall ye say unto him, Because the Lord hath need of him. And they that were sent went their way, and found even as he had said unto them. And as they were loosing the colt, the owners therefore said unto them, Why loose ye the colt? And they said, The Lord hath need of him. And they brought him to Jesus, and they cast their garments upon the colt, and they set Jesus thereon." So we see Jesus giving disciples very clear instructions, and he's even thinking ahead and saying, now if someone asks you why you're taking this donkey, then say this and this and this. And my wife and I were discussing this, and we're like, we like to just tell the children, now go out and shovel snow. Just, yeah, it snowed, you know, go shovel the drive. Now, it's so much better to say, go get the aluminum snow shovel, and I want each of you to shovel half of the drive. You take the top, you take the bottom, and when you're done, I want you to get the salt that is in the far corner of the garage and bring it out, and I want you to salt the driveway. But that takes about three times as long to say all that. So we don't give detailed instructions. And we're trying to decide, my wife and I are discussing, is it faster to just tell them to go shovel snow and then go out and give additional instructions later, or to give as many instructions at the very beginning? And we said it's probably faster to give them all at the beginning, because you don't have to keep going back and giving additional instructions. But that would be another way that we can set good expectations, is to give good instructions. Yep, yeah, that too. I always wonder why that doesn't work, but yeah, it should, right? The salt melts ice; it should melt snow. But anyway, and then we have just a couple other ones. How about being encouraging? That's one I struggle with. I don't know how to really encourage people. I can analyze. You know, was your performance good or was it not? But how do you say, well, good job? And good job is kind of overused. Hey, gold star, you know, great. But can we be an encourager? That was a really great job that you did. I really appreciate that. And I think that's all something we could work on, rather than dwelling on the negative. Well, I see it's 90% done, but what about the other 10% that's not done? And focusing on that. And I think we could all be more encouraging. God told Joshua, you know, be strong and of good courage. And I think we need that type of encouragement in our lives. We need to be honest. So Jesus said, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. And, you know, with the thought about conciseness, In Ecclesiastes 12, it says, "In the making of many books, there is no end, and much study is the weariness of the soul." So, you know, many, many books and much studying is good, but at the end of the day, it's fear God and keep His commandments. So there's, you know, there's a benefit to being concise and not being extremely long-winded. Kindness, or a word's kind. Proverbs 31 woman says she opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Are we humble? Do we look on the ways of others and not on our own ways? So I think these are some. Okay, and then one last one here. Be a good teacher. 1 Timothy 1:6 says, "Certain persons, by swerving from these, have wandered away into vain discussion, desiring to be teachers of the law, without understanding either what they are saying or the things about which they are making assertions." And Proverbs 22:6 says that teaching should be with kindness. So I think there is something to that, that when we go to teach others, that maybe we do have something to share with them, and we need to help them understand something, that we actually know, we have a good understanding of what we're trying to share, and then that we try and convey that, and we convey that with kindness to them. They don't feel that we're somehow up here and we're, you know, let me convey that knowledge to someone on a lower level or something like that. So I'd say, yeah, let's keep keep working on our communication skills. Let's try and have communication that's patterned after the good examples in the Bible. And may God bless each one of you.